A company collapses. Another hits record profits. A leader is celebrated, then vilified. We watch these cycles repeat endlessly, yet rarely ask, what if we're playing the wrong game entirely? What if the very idea of winning in business, politics, or life is a dangerous illusion? There are two types of games unfolding around us every day. Finite games have clear rules, known players, and definitive endpoints. Think football or chess. Someone wins, someone loses, the buzzer sounds. Infinite games have no finish line. Players come and go, rules evolve, and the only goal is to keep playing. Business, education, marriage, politics, these are all infinite games, yet we treat them like finite contests with winners and losers. This confusion creates what we might call existential quicksand. Companies obsess over quarterly earnings while strangling innovation. Leaders chase arbitrary rankings instead of meaningful progress. Microsoft's Zune perfectly illustrates this trap. Despite bold predictions it would beat the iPod, it launched with 9% market share, plummeted to 1%, then vanished. The problem wasn't timing or marketing, it was mindset. Obsessed with defeating Apple rather than advancing a vision, Microsoft developed tunnel vision, reacting instead of creating. Contrast this with Victorinox. When knife sales collapsed after 9/11, they didn't panic or slash payroll. They increased product development, expanded into new markets, and ultimately doubled revenue. They embraced transformation rather than merely surviving it. The difference? Finite-minded leaders use companies to prove their worth. Infinite-minded leaders use their careers to enhance the company's lasting value. During the Nazi siege of Leningrad, 9 botanists died of hunger protecting Nikolai Vavilov's seed collection while surrounded by edible specimens. They guarded a vision of ending world hunger through crop diversity, something bigger than themselves. A true just cause must meet 5 criteria. First, it must be for something affirmative, not merely against something. Second, it must be inclusive, open to all who wish to contribute. Third, it must be service-oriented, primarily benefiting others. Fourth, it must be resilient enough to endure change. American railroads failed by defining themselves by trains rather than transportation. Finally, it must be idealistic, big and bold enough to be ultimately unachievable. Common imposters include moonshots. Kennedy's challenge inspired sacrifice, but was finite. Being the best is equally inadequate. Garmin aimed to be the global leader in every market, but focused on hardware while smartphones emerged, missing navigation opportunities. Pursuing growth as primary purpose is like answering vacation when asked your destination. Corporate responsibility programs aren't substitutes unless integrated into core purpose. Finite leaders make money to do good, while infinite leaders do good making money. When Four Seasons barista Noah says he loves his job because managers check on his needs rather than catch mistakes, he reveals something profound about organizational health. Every game requires 2 currencies, will and resources. Resources are tangible, money, equipment, facilities. Will is intangible, morale, motivation, commitment. Finite-minded leaders prioritize resources and immediate results, even at the cost of people. Infinite-minded leaders put people first, understanding that will drives discretionary effort and teamwork. Many leaders view people as costs rather than investments. Angela Ahrendts discovered at Apple that comprehensive benefits cost nothing incrementally. Expenses were offset by lower recruiting and training costs. Costco's higher wages result in 90% retention versus the industry's 20-30%. During the 2008 recession, the Container Store faced a 13% sales drop but avoided layoffs, implementing salary freezes instead. Employees voluntarily found savings, downgrading hotels, foregoing expense reports, convincing vendors to reduce prices. This devotion resulted from years of trust. Unlike limited resources, will can be generated endlessly through culture, something leaders control. Organizations with strong will are more resilient because people rally together by choice, not command. When Rick Fox led Shell's Ursa offshore drilling platform, consultant Claire Neuer suggested his crew express their feelings. This fostered psychological safety with extraordinary results. Ursa achieved one of the industry's best safety records, 99% uptime versus 95% industry average, exceeded production goals by 14 million barrels, and contributed to an 84% decline in company-wide accidents. The Navy's SEALs evaluate candidates on performance and trust. High performers with low trust prove toxic, exhibiting narcissism, blaming others, and poisoning team dynamics. SEALs prefer medium or even low performers of high trust. Business cultures often prioritize performance over trust, breeding information hoarding, credit stealing, and sabotage. When Alan Mulally became Ford CEO in 2006, executives presented only green status reports, conditioned by his predecessor who humiliated bearers of bad news. Mulally persisted until Mark Fields finally marked one slide red. Instead of punishment, Mulally applauded his honesty and asked, "Who can help Mark with this?" Other executives gradually followed, revealing the company's true challenges. In strong cultures, people find safety in relationships rather than rules. A leader's primary responsibility isn't delivering results, it's developing people who deliver those results. There was someone whose name made me uncomfortable. Envy washed over me when others praised him. Though we'd met professionally and I respected his work, I obsessively compared myself to this person who wrote books and gave talks like me. I'd check online rankings, smiling smugly when mine ranked higher, scowling when his did. Everything changed when we shared a stage. Asked to introduce each other, I confessed, "You make me unbelievably insecure because all of your strengths are all my weaknesses." He replied, "The insecurity is mutual." In that moment, I realized my competitive feelings weren't about him, they were about me. Instead of improving myself, I'd focused on beating him in an arbitrary race. He wasn't my competitor, he was my worthy rival. In infinite games, we must stop seeing other players as competitors to beat and start viewing them as worthy rivals who reveal our weaknesses and push us to improve. Tennis legends Chris Evert Lloyd and Martina Navratilova exemplified this, fierce competitors who respected how they elevated each other's game. When Alan Mulally became Ford CEO in 2006, he shocked everyone by admitting he drove a Lexus. To transform Ford, he viewed Toyota as a worthy rival whose efficiency provided benchmarks for improvement. When IBM entered the personal computer market, Apple ran a Wall Street Journal ad, "Welcome, IBM, seriously." This rivalry helped Apple clarify its identity as champions of individuality against IBM's corporate stability. In 1952, despite his company's success, Walt Disney liquidated assets, sold property, borrowed against his life insurance, and licensed his own name to pursue what many considered a mad venture. As Disney grew, it became stratified, with widening wage gaps and union struggles. The breakdown of his studio Utopia left Walt defeated. 15 years after Snow White, convinced the business could no longer advance his just cause, Walt made an existential flex. He quit. Using borrowed funds, Walt formed WED in 1952 to build Disneyland, a place where people could escape reality in an immaculate environment that could keep evolving forever, unlike finite movies. Existential flexibility is the capacity to initiate extreme disruption to advance a just cause. While finite-minded players fear disruption, infinite-minded leaders embrace it when their current path restricts their cause. Kodak executives exemplify the opposite. They suppress their own digital camera technology to protect their film business. Developer Steven Sossen noted executives weren't concerned about changes 18, 20 years ahead when they'd be gone. Though Kodak profited from digital patents until 2007, once they expired, the company filed for bankruptcy in 2012, not from market conditions or technology, but from existential inflexibility. In 2014, CVS stopped tobacco sales across 2,800 stores, sacrificing $2 billion annually to honor its just cause, helping people on their path to better health. Wall Street predicted disaster. Instead, cigarette sales dropped 1%, share price doubled within 18 months, and earnings per share rose 70% over 3 years. Doug Parker became CEO of America West Airlines on September 1, 2001, 10 days before 9/11 devastated the industry. Facing certain failure, a conversation with Mary, a flight attendant and single mother, transformed his perspective from business challenge to personal mission. With renewed determination, he secured the seemingly impossible loan. Our lives are finite, but life itself is infinite. We're temporary players in a game that continues beyond us. We can't choose whether to play, only our mindset, finite or infinite. A finite approach prioritizes personal wealth and advancement. An infinite mindset advances causes bigger than ourselves, builds trusting partnerships, and helps others rise. Finite parenting obsesses over achievements. Infinite parenting helps children discover talents, value service, and embrace lifelong learning. The infinite game isn't about winning. It's about continuing to play, advancing causes that outlive us, and leaving the world better than we found it.